The Golden Bough. A Study of Magic and Religion. By Sir James George Frazer. This audiobook was produced by Klaus-Dieter Mond, Rastatt, Germany and is published under the conditions of the Gutenberg Organization. Chapter 5. The Magical Control of the Weather. Section 2. The Magical Control of Rain. Part 2. The people of Eghiau, a district of Abyssinia, used to engage in sanguinary conflicts with each other, village against village, for a week together every January for the purpose of procuring rain. Some years ago the Emperor Menelik forbade the custom. However, the following year the rain was deficient, and the popular outcry so great that the Emperor yielded to it, and allowed the murderous fights to be resumed, but for 2 days a year only. The writer who mentions the custom regards the bloodshed on these occasions as a propitiatory sacrifice offered to spirits who control the showers. But perhaps, as in the Australian and Javanese ceremonies, it is an imitation of rain. The prophets of Baal, who sought to procure rain by cutting themselves with knives till the blood gushed out, may have acted on the same principle. There is a widespread belief that twin children possess magical powers over nature, especially over rain and the weather. This curious superstition prevails among some of the Indian tribes of British Columbia, and has led them often to impose certain singular restrictions or taboos on their parents of twins, though the exact meaning of these restrictions is generally obscure. Thus the Tsimshian Indians of British Columbia believe that twins control the weather. Therefore they pray to wind and rain, calm down, breath of the twins. Further, they think that the wishes of twins are always fulfilled. Hence twins are feared, because they can harm the man they hate. They can also call the salmon and the olachen or candlefish, and so they are known by a name which means, making plentiful. In the opinion of the Quakiutl Indians of British Columbia, twins are transformed salmon. Hence they may not go near water, lest they should be changed back again into the fish. In their childhood they can summon any wind by motions of their hands, and they can make fair or foul weather, and also cure diseases by swinging a large wooden rattle. The Nootka Indians of British Columbia also believe that twins are somehow related to salmon. Hence among them twins may not catch salmon, and they may not eat or even handle the fresh fish. They can make fair or foul weather, and can cause rain to fall by painting their faces black and then washing them, which may represent the rain dripping from the dark clouds. The Shuswap Indians, like the Thompson Indians, associate twins with the grizzly bear, for they call them young grizzly bears. According to them, twins remain throughout life endowed with supernatural powers. In particular, they can make good or bad weather. They produce rain by spilling water from a basket in the air. They make fine weather by shaking a small flat piece of wood attached to a stick by a string. They raise storms by strewing down on the ends of spruce branches. The same power of influencing the weather is attributed to twins by the Barong, a tribe of Bantu Negroes who inhabit the shores of Delagoa Bay in southeastern Africa. They bestow the name of Telothetis, the sky, on a woman who has given birth to twins, and the infants themselves are called the children of the sky. Now when the storms which generally burst in the months of September and October have been looked for in vain, when a drought with its prospect of famine is threatening, and all nature, scorched and burnt up by a sun that has shone for 6 months from a cloudless sky, is panting for the beneficent showers of the South African spring, the women perform ceremonies to bring down the longed-for rain on the parched earth. Stripping themselves of all their garments, they assume in their stead girdles and headdresses of grass, or short petticoats made of the leaves of a particular sort of creeper. Thus attired, uttering peculiar cries and singing ribald songs, they go about from well to well, cleansing them of the mud and impurities which have accumulated in them. The wells, it may be said, are merely holes in the sand where a little tepid unwholesome water stagnates. Further, the women must repair to the house of one of the gossips who has given birth to twins, and must drench her with water, which they carry in little pitchers. Having done so they go on their way, shrieking out their loose songs and dancing immodest dances. No man may see these leaf-clad women going their rounds. If they meet a man, they maul him and thrust him aside. When they have cleansed the wells, they must go and pour water on the graves of their ancestors in the sacred grove. It often happens, too, that at the bidding of the wizard they go and pour water on the graves of twins. For they think that the grave of a twin always to be moist, for which reason twins are regularly buried near a lake. If all their efforts to procure rain prove abortive, they will remember that such and such a twin was buried in a dry place on the side of a hill. No wonder, says the wizard in such a case, that the sky is fiery. Take up his body and dig him a grave on the shore of the lake. His orders are at once obeyed, for this is supposed to be the only means of bringing down the rain. Some of the foregoing facts strongly support an interpretation which Professor Waldenberg has given of the rules to be observed by a Brahmin who would learn a particular hymn of the ancient Indian collection known as the Samaveda. The hymn, which bears the name of the Sakvari song, was believed to embody the might of Indra's weapon, the thunderbolt. And hence, on account of the dreadful and dangerous potency with which it was thus charged, the bold student who essayed to master it had to be isolated from his fellow men, and to retire from the village into the forest. Here for a space of time, which might vary, according to different doctors of the law, from 1 to 12 years, he had to observe certain rules of life, among which were the following. Thrice a day he had to touch water. He must wear black garments and eat black food. When it rained, he might not seek the shelter of a roof, but had to sit in the rain and say, "Water is the Sakvari song." When the lightning flashed, he said, "That is like the Sakvari song." When the thunder pealed, he said, "The Great One is making a great noise." He might never cross a running stream without touching water. He might never set foot on a ship unless his life were in danger, and even then he must be sure to touch water when he went on board. For in water, so ran the saying, lies the virtue of the Sakvari song. When at last he was allowed to learn the song itself, he had to dip his hands in a vessel of water in which plants of all sorts had been placed. If a man walked in the way of all these precepts, the rain god Parjanya, it was said, would send rain at the wish of that man. It is clear, as Professor Waldenberg well points out, that all these rules are intended to bring the Brahman into union with water, to make him, as it were, an ally of the water powers, and to guard him against their hostility. The black garments and the black food have the same significance. No one will doubt that they refer to the rain clouds when he remembers that a black victim is sacrificed to procure rain. It is black, for such is the nature of rain. Single quote in respect of another rain charm, it is said plainly, he puts on a black garment edged with black, for such is the nature of rain. Single quote. We may therefore assume that here in the circle of ideas and ordinances of the Vedic schools there have been preserved magical practices of the most remote antiquity, which were intended to prepare the rainmaker for his office and dedicate him to it. It is interesting to observe that where an opposite result is desired, primitive logic enjoins the weather doctor to observe precisely opposite rules of conduct. In the tropical island of Java, where the rich vegetation attests the abundance of the rainfall, ceremonies for the making of rain are rare, but ceremonies for the prevention of it are not uncommon. When a man is about to give a great feast in the rainy season and has invited many people, he goes to a weather doctor and asks him to prop up the clouds that may be lowering. If the doctor consents to exert his professional powers, he begins to regulate his behavior by certain rules as soon as his customer has departed. He must observe a fast, and may neither drink nor bathe. What little he eats must be eaten dry, and in no case may he touch water. The host, on his side, and his servants, both male and female, must neither wash clothes nor bathe so long as the feast lasts, and they have all during its continuance to observe strict chastity. The doctor seats himself on a new mat in his bedroom, and before a small oil lamp he murmurs, shortly before the feast takes place, The following prayer or incantation, grandfather and grandmother Srokal. The name seems to be taken at random. Others are sometimes used, return to your country. Akhemat is your country. Put down your water cask, close it properly, that not a drop may fall out. While he utters this prayer the sorcerer looks upwards, burning incense the while. So among the Tauragis the rain doctor, whose special business it is to drive away rain, takes care not to touch water before, during, or after the discharge of his professional duties. He does not bathe, he eats with unwashed hands, he drinks nothing but palm wine, and if he has to cross a stream he is careful not to step in the water. Having thus prepared himself for his task he has a small hut built for himself outside of the village in a rice field, and in this hut he keeps up a little fire, which on no account may be suffered to go out. In the fire he burns various kinds of wood, which are supposed to possess the property of driving off rain. And he puffs in the direction from which the rain threatens to come, holding in his hand a packet of leaves and bark which derive a similar cloud-compelling virtue, not from their chemical composition, but from their names, which happen to signify something dry or volatile. If clouds should appear in the sky while he is at work, he takes lime in the hollow of his hand and blows it towards them. The lime, being so very dry, is obviously well adapted to disperse the damp clouds. Should rain afterwards be wanted, he has only to pour water on his fire, and immediately the rain will descend in sheets. The reader will observe how exactly the Javanas and Tauraja observances, which are intended to prevent rain, form the antithesis of the Indian observances, which aim at producing it. The Indian sages commanded to touch water thrice a day regularly as well as on various special occasions. The Javanas and Tauraja wizards may not touch it at all. The Indian lives out in the forest, and even when it rains he may not take shelter. The Javanas and the Tauraja sit in the house or a hut. The one signifies his sympathy with water by receiving the rain on his person and speaking of it respectfully. The others light a lamp or a fire and do their best to drive the rain away. Yet the principle on which all three act is the same. Each of them, by a sort of childish make-believe, identifies himself with the phenomenon which he desires to produce. It is the old fallacy that the effect resembles its cause. If you would make wet weather, you must be wet. If you would make dry weather, you must be dry. In southeastern Europe at the present day ceremonies are observed for the purpose of making rain which not only rest on the same general train of thought as the preceding, but even in their details resemble the ceremonies practiced with the same intention by the Barong of Delagoa Bay. Among the Greeks of Thessaly and Macedonia, when a drought has lasted a long time, it is customary to send a procession of children round to all the wells and springs of the neighborhood. At the head of the procession walks a girl adorned with flowers, whom her companions drench with water at every halting place, while they sing an invocation, of which the following is part. Purpuria all fresh bedewid, fresh in all the neighborhood. By the woods, on the highway, as thou goest, to God now pray, O my God, upon the plain, send thou us a still, small rain, that the fields may fruitful be, and vines in blossom we may see, that the grain be full and sound, and wealthy grow the folks around. In time of drought the Serbians strip a girl to her skin and clothe her from head to foot in grass, herbs, and flowers, even her face being hidden behind a veil of living green. Thus disguised she is called the Dodola, and goes through the village with a troop of girls. They stop before every house. The Dodola keeps turning herself round and dancing, while the other girls form a ring about her singing one of the Dodola songs, and the housewife pours a pail of water over her. One of the songs they sing runs thus. We go through the village. The clouds go in the sky. We go faster, faster go the clouds. They have overtaken us, and wetted the corn and the vine. At Pune in India, when rain is needed, the boys dress up one of their number in nothing but sleeves and call him King of Rain. Then they go round to every house in the village, where the householder or his wife sprinkles the rain king with water, and gives the party food of various kinds. When they have thus visited all the houses, they strip the Rain King of his leafy robes and feast upon what they have gathered. Bathing is practiced as a rain charm in some parts of southern and western Russia. Sometimes after service in church, the priest in his robes has been thrown down on the ground and drenched with water by his parishioners. Sometimes it is the women who, without stripping off their clothes, bathe in crowds on the day of Saint John the Baptist, while they dip in the water a figure made of branches, grass, and herbs, which is supposed to represent the saint. In Kursk, a province of southern Russia, when rain is much wanted, the women seize a passing stranger and throw him into the river, or seduce him from head to foot. Later on we shall see that a passing stranger is often taken for a deity or the personification of some natural power. It is recorded in official documents that during a drought in 1790 the peasants of Skorouts and Werbouts collected all the women and compelled them to bathe, in order that rain might fall. An Armenian rain charm is to throw the wife of a priest into the water and drench her. The Arabs of North Africa fling a holy man, willy-nilly, into a spring as a remedy for drought. In Minahassa, a province of North Celebes, the priest bathes as a rain charm. In central Celebes, when there has been no rain for a long time and the rice stalks begin to shrivel up, many of the villagers, especially the young folk, go to a neighboring brook and splash each other with water, shouting noisily, or squirt water on one another through bamboo tubes. Sometimes they imitate the plump of rain by smacking the surface of the water with their hands, or by placing an inverted gourd on it and drumming on the gourd with their fingers. Women are sometimes supposed to be able to make rain by plowing, or pretending to plow. Thus the Pshos and Chosers of the Caucasus have a ceremony called plowing the rain, which they observe in time of drought. Girls yoke themselves to a plow and drag it into a river, wading in the water up to their girdles. In the same circumstances, Armenian girls and women do the same. The oldest woman, or the priest's wife, wears the priest's dress, while the others, dressed as men, drag the plow through the water against the stream. In the Caucasian province of Georgia, when a drought has lasted long, marriageable girls are yoked in couples with an ox yoke on their shoulders, a priest holds the reins, and thus harnessed they wade through rivers, puddles, and marshes, praying, screaming, weeping, and laughing. In a district of Transylvania, when the ground is parched with drought, some girls strip themselves naked, and, led by an older woman, who is also naked, they steal a harrow and carry it across the fields to a brook, where they set it afloat. Next they sit on the harrow and keep a tiny flame burning on each corner of it for an hour. Then they leave the harrow in the water and go home. A similar rain charm is resorted to in some parts of India. Naked women drag a plow across a field by night, while the men keep carefully out of the way, for their presence would break the spell. Sometimes the rain charm operates through the dead. Thus in New Caledonia the rainmakers blackened themselves all over, dug up a dead body, took the bones to a cave, jointed them, and hung the skeleton over some taro leaves. Water was poured over the skeleton to run down on the leaves. They believed that the soul of the deceased took up the water, converted it into rain, and showered it down again. In Russia, if common report may be believed, it is not long since the peasants of any district that chanced to be afflicted with drought used to dig up the corpse of someone who had drunk himself to death and sink it in the nearest swamp or lake, fully persuaded that this would ensure the fall of the needed rain. In 1868 the prospect of a bad harvest, caused by a prolonged drought, induced the inhabitants of a village in the Tarashchansk district to dig up the body of a Raskolnik, or dissenter, who had died in the preceding December. Some of the party beat the corpse, or what was left of it, about the head, exclaiming, "Give us rain," while others poured water on it through a sieve. Here the pouring of water through a sieve seems plainly an imitation of a shower, and reminds us of the manner in which Strepsiades and Aristophanes imagined that rain was made by Zeus. Sometimes, in order to procure rain, the Tauragus make an appeal to the pity of the dead. Thus, In the village of Kalingo'at, there is the grave of a famous chief, the grandfather of the present ruler. When the land suffers from unseasonable drought, the people go to this grave, pour water on it, and say, "O grandfather, have pity on us. If it is your will that this year we should eat, then give rain." After that they hang a bamboo full of water over the grave. There is a small hole in the lower end of the bamboo, so that the water drips from it continually. The bamboo is always refilled with water until rain drenches the ground. Here, as in New Caledonia, we find religion blent with magic, for the prayer to the dead chief, which is purely religious, is eked out with a magical imitation of rain at his grave. We have seen that the Barongas of Delago Abbey drenched the tombs of their ancestors, especially the tombs of twins, as a rain charm. Among some of the Indian tribes in the region of the Orinoco, it was customary for the relations of a deceased person to disinter his bones a year after burial, burn them, and scatter the ashes to the winds, because they believed that the ashes were changed into rain, which the dead man sent in return for his obsequies.